Welcome to Paper Money, the biweekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from Zombie State, Diplomacy of the Dead, to Zuloretto, Zombie State Games, to Rio Grande Games. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Red Kip. Today, Zombie State Diplomacy of the Dead. I love that title.
It sounds, you have a map of the world, and you start out with a military and scientific complex who cannot deal with zombies. In each turn, you have to, like, develop capability to fight the zombies as they're spreading all over the globe.
Now, I was just liking the Diplomacy of the Dead. That was my keynote, you know.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to... You now know as much as I do about the game. One of the guys in my game group here recently bought it. It's not in distribution yet. You have to buy it direct from Zombie State Games. But well-produced, nice-looking game that I might be playing soon, so I'll be able to tell you about Zombie State Diplomacy of the Dead.
Cool.
Hey, I had to pick... I had Z titles. It was Zombie something, right? It was going to be something zombies.
Yeah, and let's not forget to tell them what day today is.
Today is June 20th, 2010. I even got the year right. It's already June, and I'm very excited about that.
And you've already got 2010 down. Hey, you know, I still write checks with 2010. It all must be coming together. Or it'll be 2011 in just another blink of an eye, and we'll have to work that all down again.
I know. I should just stop. But anyways, yesterday was Free RPG Day.
Yeah, what a great day. I love it.
And I got to tell you, I feel like such a schmeel, a yutz, an idiot. We didn't pimp it on the show at all.
No, we didn't. And it's schlummeel.
Yeah, I know. I botched it. Anyways, my Yiddish just isn't what it should be. But I was really surprised because I didn't see a lot of online press on it. Purple Pawn didn't really cover it until after the fact. And I know that I'm sure that RPG Now and some of the others were all over it, but I completely missed it.
Yeah, you know, it's very strange. I knew about it. The product came in, well, 2 or 3 weeks ago at the store. So, you know, it had been very obvious to me at the time that it had come in, and just the date had kind of like slipped past me. Too much habit. It's become too commonplace, and I don't think there's a lot of people working as hard as they once were to go out and
proselytize.
Yeah.
Evangelicize. I don't know. Suffice to say, as a marketing effort, and here, let me give you a rundown of some of the companies and stuff that they were giving away. Fantasy Flight Games was giving away a Warhammer 40K Death Watch adventure. Paizo was giving away a Pathfinder module. Q Workshop and Chessex were giving away dice. Trollord Games had a Castles and Crusades quick start. White Wolf was giving away Exalted quick start stuff. Hold on. Again. Wizards of the Coast, Dark Sun 4th Edition D&D module. Goodman Games, Age of Cthulhu adventure module. Mayfair Games was giving away variant rules for Atlantis, Laboom, and Pillars of the Earth, which, strictly speaking, are not RPGs. A new magazine basically launched.
Okay, yeah.
D-Infinity. So there's a lot of stuff going on for this, but somehow, I don't know where the press went on it. So you said that the store was pretty hopping with people picking up some of the stuff.
Yeah, people were in anticipation. In particular, the Paizo Pathfinder stuff, that was an obvious one. They've got a built-in market for that. I don't know how many new people were actually, you know, rushing to the door to grab that one. That seemed to be more targeted by its current audience. The big one I thought was cool for the crossover group that we were seeing was Fantasy Flight's the Death Watch RPG adventure. 40K adventure, I should say, very specifically, because that's the one that's going to allow you to finally play Space Marines.
Yay.
So you can get out there with your, you know, 9-foot-tall, you know, mega-human and romp and stomp across the universe, killing and maiming things, and then, you know, spend multiple hours in prayer, proselytization, and all the other fun things that Space Marines do.
And you get to wear really, really big shoulder pads.
Really, really big shoulder pads. That, I mean, a very, very 80s look there.
But, the thing that, and you and I were talking a little bit this about in the pre-show, I think this is a good idea because Death Watch, all right, the RPG, has an entry-level price of, what, $60-$65 on the book?
Yeah, I believe
which is not uncommon anymore.
No, I mean, AEG just launched its new edition of Legend of the Five Rings RPG. Mm-hmm. A beautiful book, but it's a $60 entry point. And I mean, you know, we've seen that a lot this year. Hero Games, they just came out with a 6th edition Hero. 6th edition Hero was two big books, a combined total of around $80. You know, Dresden Files is coming out. Dresden Files, a brand new game. Same type of thing. The two main book pieces are going to run you, I think, $70 or $80.
Where are we at with that? Right, we've got this. We have $100 board games becoming common from companies like FFG. My question is: Are we at the late 1970s monster game stage? Right, where we keep adding chrome and production value. And bigger games that we sell to our core audience, but we're losing the casual.
Well, I certainly think that it's a fine line we walk. You know, first of all, there's the real world economics, which says you got to make money. Mm-hmm. So you got to ask a certain level, and the quality competition keeps going into effect, and people are buying it. So let's start with the important things. People are buying it. Now the question comes down to, you know, as you say, do we get new people into it? The one thing I will say that I think is still unique in the past decade is the free intro games, the advent of the internet and PDF files and the incredibly cheap prices you can make on a PDF file mm-hmm. for anything. And the quality levels that we're seeing on giveaways. You know, this isn't black and white, no art, 4 pages.
Run on a mimeograph machine, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, these are all high-end pieces. They would have been, you know, they're high-quality 1990-era comparatives. They kick their butt. Mm-hmm. You know, these are top-end stuff, and a lot of companies have given those types of intro game RPG stuff away for free. Mm-hmm. And I think they've done fairly well with them, you know.
I mean, let's face it, if you're trying to convince somebody to spend $65 on a brand new system, then you're going to need to entice them.
Absolutely.
This is not a $20 impulse purchase. Well, I'll read it on the bus to school or on the train or whatever and see if I like it. You know, at $65, you're like, we're going to, you know, my game group better play at least one adventure of this stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, we're seeing all sorts of different levels of commitment, too, as far as, you know, post-rules requirements. You know, we've got Wizards of the Coast 4th edition. In order to really play 4th edition, it's a huge miniatures investment. You need the special grid stuff. Because you have to keep track of those figures. It's no longer an abstraction. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really critical. And a number, you know, I'm just using that as a single example because there's a number of those types of products out there right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Euro game, which is in a big way, the other big intro into the industry, you know, we're still talking the Euro games are in the $50 range for the most part. And
yeah. Well,
I go back to
Real Grand just came out with Asteroids, which is a fairly straightforward race board game. It's $55.
Yeah.
Retail. So, the price has gone up. Now, I will say this. Thank God the quality has gone up. Right?
Yeah,
I remember the early 80s, you know, and comparatively speaking, in fact, my son was going through some of my, he was going through my AD&D 2nd edition rulebook and going, boy, the art in here is like really bad.
Well, you know, and I, you know, personally, I go back to the beginning of time and, you know, we were creating games using styluses and clay tablets, but the production qualities have always gone up. And in particular, I would say in the past, about a decade, we'll give it only a decade. It's really top end. I mean, you know, it's always kind of been top end for its period.
Mm-hmm.
Effectively, Mayfair, you know, forced the issue upon the industry, and there's been no looking back from that moment.
Wait. Mayfair forced the issue on the RPG industry about quality?
About the look and production qualities of products. Yeah, prior to Mayfair going and buying secondary usage of all the, like, Frazetta art and mm-hmm. Vallejo art and things like that, and, you know, making their modules look well, like modern books and everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the products that we were seeing that were coming out that were industry standard, you know, looked like you'd hired your, you know, your 13-year-old, you know, kid who was in art class at school to do your covers.
Okay. You're talking about Mayfair's 1980s era third party modules.
You got
the industry.
It.
Okay. All right.
And that really changed what people needed as a standard. It really forced, you know, higher production quality. And, you know, the most important driving aspect, I think, of it are the two big ones. Number one, the desire from the manufacturers to just be better. And number two, the demand of the consumer that you look better. Slick is cool. I hear this argument on a regular basis on the historical miniatures end. You know, where they're ready to come out with the 12-page mimeograph of rules, and they can't understand why, you know, it doesn't sell well compared to the, you know, super slick book that the rules aren't very interesting at all.
Yeah, no, completely understood on that. Well, let's move on a little bit, by the way. You and I will go into the...
Yeah, we could be here for all show.
That's right. So you heard it here first, folks. Mayfair Games, 1980s, third-party venture modules changed the world, according to Rhett, and that's why you're spending $65 on the new AEG L5R book.
But they look great.
Yeah. Now, one of the products handed out at RPG Day we just mentioned is D-Infinity. This is a new game magazine jointly published by, dig this, ArmorCast, Dark Threads, Flying Buffalo, Mind Game Productions, Off-World Designs, Skirmisher Publishing, and the United States Space Marine Corps. It's going to be a 64-page quarterly covering a variety of RPG systems, namely from the groups mentioned earlier, including 4th edition D&D, Pathfinder, OGL 3.5, Basic System, yada, yada, yada. Free preview issue can be downloaded from DriveThruRPG. The first full issue will be available at Gen Con. Now, we've seen a couple of magazines say they're launching or threaten to launch, or they're going to do a web launch and then move into print. This is a full-blown print magazine. It's only quarterly, but is this going to fill the... Is this the one to finally fill the void between with the departure of Dragon?
Frankly, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of problems in a single house publication, you know, which this certainly gets away from. But magazines in general are a dying medium, you know.
Well, certainly in this industry.
Well, not just in this industry. I mean, they're a dying medium.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, we are not going to go. You're not going to bait me with that.
I'm not going to bait you with that one. We're going
to. I tend to agree that the temporary nature of a print magazine does not lend itself to the modern era. But
a news-oriented one in particular has a bigger problem because news is instantaneous nowadays.
Correct. Except for the free RPG date, which was not instantaneous in my case. So, but anyways, D-Infinity is the name of it. It's D with the infinity symbol is coming out. Look for them at Gen Con. The article on purplepawn.com does not mention Origins, but again, if they've got the free preview issue over at DriveThruRPG, check it out. Also last week, the Ticket to Ride World Championships were streamed live on Trick Track. That's TRICTRAC.TV. Now, I love Ticket to Ride as much as the next guy, but is this the next thing? Are we going to be broadcasting board game championships like their sporting events? Are we going to have World Series of Poker followed by the Ticket to Ride World Championships?
Well, why not? They've been, you know, they broadcast the Magic Championship a number of years back on ESPN2.
Sure it wasn't on the Ocho? ESPN 8?
Actually, oddly enough, yes, it was on ESPN2. It was on ESPN2 when basically ESPN2 was looking for anything to fill it in.
Yeah, back when they had like mud buggy racing and stuff like that.
You're spot on there. Yeah. And, you know, so like I say, it's not the first time. You know, how big this television audience is, I have no idea. But especially, you know, challenged by potentially being up against the World Cup in Europe where this would be a little less important.
Yeah, anyways, I thought it was interesting to see, and partly because of something we'll talk about later in the broadcast. But so new media, Ticket to Ride World Championships, broadcast/streamed on TV.
I still think it's cool.
Okay, thank you. I'm moving on. We got a lot of ground to cover. But anyways, Indie Press Revolution was sold. DOJ Inc., the parent company of Hero Games, has announced its acquisition of a majority stake in Indie Press Revolution from Brennan Taylor, one of the company's founders. Indie Press Revolution is a distributor and online retailer for so-called indie publishers of role-playing games. Brennan, one of IPR's founders, will retain a minority interest, as will other current investors. Now, this is the second time that in fairly recent history that we've seen a distributor buy a game company. We just saw this over in England, and I forget the name of the company now. I feel like a total moron having just made the reference. But that said, they've been doing the warehousing and shipping services for IPR for almost 2 years, but I was surprised. I'm surprised to see distributors start weaseling into the game market. And I say weaseling in a friendly sense. Usually as a distributor, you want to be product line neutral, right? You don't want to be accused of having a bias one way or the other.
Well, but I don't really see these in the same sense of distribution as, you know, for example, like the big guys out there, Alliance and ACD.
Yeah, it should be pointed out DOJ is not, strictly speaking, a distributor, I guess. I don't mean to.
Yeah, I mean, effectively, the whole point of the Indie Press was to allow all these very small press guys some way to get their product together, to go back and do what we've said is a problem in the industry. If I'm a one-shot, you know, how do I get a distributor to pay any attention to me whatsoever? How do I get a retailer to pay any attention to me whatsoever? This allowed them to link all those games together. And, I mean, there are a lot of these things out there. I'm thinking that this line must be somewhere between 40 and 60 titles at this point.
Yeah, I've gone to their booth at the Gen Con show, and it's really neat.
Yeah, so, like, and
there's a lot of cool stuff out there.
The qualities vary quite a bit because they are published by, you know, different groups. But like I say, this gets back to that position of it puts a lot of eggs into one easy to grab basket. It allows you to order ones here and there, especially in games like most of these, which, you know, they're not going to be, you know, flying off the shelf.
Right.
You know, but they do sell. And it allows you to go ahead and get the kind of numbers that you need to fill in an order, you know, to get the free freight, which a lot of the retailers and distributors are after in order to be a little bit more profitable. I mean, freight's becoming bigger and bigger all the time, cost-wise. I believe, you know, just as a standard.
No, I always tell new customers all the time when we're printing a game for them, I said, you're going to negotiate a deal with, you know, a distributor, I said, but I guarantee you, you guys are going to have to hem and haw over who pays freight.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it is
a big deal. So
I was going to say, I think it was only 5 years ago that, you know, UPS was $6 a package to ship. It's $10 a package to ship. It's a huge cost increase.
Exactly.
So, but like I say, I think this is a good thing here. First of all, they've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, Hero Games, it's not like somebody just walked through the door.
Right, yeah.
You know, and said, oh, we're going to get the game market. Hero Games has been around for a long time, so it sounds like a good fit.
The other question I have on this is, does this improve things even better? Because if, you know, DOJ's got its name out there with this, are they going to be able to make those deals so that the indie press stuff gets into broader distribution instead of just being a direct type of thing? Are they going to be able to make some deals here now with Alliance? Are they going to be able to make some deals now with ACD and get broader distribution overall? Because now, in a sense, it's the Hero universe, and, you know, can they piggyback on with the Hero stuff?
Yeah, no, that makes sense, right? Because and the answer is, we'll see. It should be good for the stronger indie titles.
Yeah.
All right, and then speaking of stronger titles, there is an excellent, excellent article over on the Purple Pond about Games Workshop, their financials. It's Games Workshop, I think, 2-year review is what the name of the article is, and we're going to post a link to it in the show notes. And I wanted to comment on it because there was a very long and fairly erudite comment thread. Which is not something you normally see when you talk about Games Workshop and profitability. Normally, the four-letter words come out really fast. But this one was it was a lot of really great reason to bait. Now, in a nutshell, Games Workshop is a public company, so they publish their, you know, they have to do a report every year, just like any public company, and so you can go over their financials. And the Purple Pawn did this and broke it down. And in a nutshell, Games Workshop is profitable after sinking in the post Lord of the Rings era. Their profitability is starting to rise a little bit again. And that seemed to be a part of the big debate. Is the amount that their income rising due to their price increases or due to other, you know, stronger sales? And it seems like the unit volume excuse me, isn't necessarily the reason for the increased sales, but it's not necessarily the price increases either. There's a lot of talk about what impact currency conversion has on their pricing, because they're huge in the U.S., but they're a British company. And now, Rhett, you and I were talking about this before the show, that their U.S. stuff is actually made in the U.S.
For the most part, all their U.S. stuff, I mean, the miniatures are made in the U.S. Packaging is assembled in the, it's printed overseas, but it's all assembled in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the printing, wherever they print, which I believe, knowing Workshop, is probably, I'm going for a long shot here, and I'm saying China. But it will say specifically on the book, and unfortunately, I don't have a current Games Workshop book to actually just flip over and look on the back cover and say, yep, printed in China. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, the situation there is, I don't know how correct that is. One of their big things that they've complained about for years has been how much money they bleed in retail. Given what they did this year to their retail, if they can't not stop bleeding money, so I'm not even asking them to be profitable. I'm just asking them that, you know, not to be hemorrhaging money. You know,
are you talking about Games Workshop retail stores are a cash drain on the parent company?
That has been their claim for years. Mm-hmm. And what they have done to their stores is just frightening. I mean, they carry the top 200 SKUs. To put that in some kind of perspective, there are something like just rule books, including the codex and stuff like that, almost 50 pieces. So they can't even really carry all their codexes. They can't carry their box set. The Space Marine line alone in just box sets is something like almost a quarter of that 200 SKUs if you brought it all through. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's very, very slim pickings in a Workshop store. They have barely enough room. I think they're somewhere between 600 and 800 square feet. They run 40, I think it's only 40 hours a week for the store, unless they're required by a mall to be open slightly longer than that.
So in other words, there's absolutely no reason to go to a Games Workshop retail store at this point.
Well, not if you're trying to buy their product. you know, if you want to see their product, that's a whole different thing. Because, yes. And again, I think they're even hurting themselves in that regard. I mean, one guy running the store, trying to run, you know, with a just barely enough room to have a demo board in play, trying to run a game at the same time, trying to keep track of what's going on in the store, taking care of the register, all the other requirements that are based on that. My guess is that, you know, their shrinkage is problematic now as well.
Yeah. So, well, especially as gamers will tell you, they raise prices again on their miniatures. And now that they're plastic, they don't clink in your pocket the way they used to. But on the way out the door. Not that I know that from personal experience or anything. But anyways, so it's a great Games Workshop article on the Purple Pawn. Again, we'll put the link in the show notes for you. Do check that out. My personal take on currency conversion is that it was not necessarily a factor last year. This year, it might be. Because the euro has dropped so dramatically versus the dollar. Now, I don't know, excuse me, they're on the British pound. I'm not sure what the pound's doing against the dollar.
Pound is also, the pound is pretty strongly linked to the euro.
Yeah.
It's not, you know.
No, it's not free-floating out there and staying super strong. But, like, the euro was at about $1.40, and now it's down to about $1.20. So that's a huge, huge swing. Some people are predicting parity on that within 4 years, something like that. So there's
think it's even going to be sooner than that, unfortunately.
Yeah. So anyways, but the long story short is that I don't know that it was a factor last year. This year, I think it's definitely going to be a factor. But again, if most of your costs are U.S. or China for the U.S. market, it's not as big a factor as you might think. So
yeah, but this is – yeah, I'm totally with you. I think this is a great article. I don't
– Red?
You know, the purple pawn is
– you blanked out for a second, so –
Oh, I was going to say, I'm not sure if it's because this article is on the Purple Pawn or if it's just the nature of the people posting on the Purple Pawn. But yeah, you know, as you said, they've been reasonable about their language. You know, had this been over on the miniatures page, for example, I think by now they would have, you know, certainly gotten in a flame fight at some point over Workshop, which tends to be the case.
Yeah.
You know, so... Kudos to the Purple Pawn and to the posters over there, you know, keeping you guys calm and, you know, yeah, doing a great job in a really emotional company.
Yeah, and like I said, it was a really well thought out analysis of the Games Workshop bottom line. So I was excited to see it as someone who likes to focus on the business side of the industry. That was great. So now let's move on. Now, last show, we promised an Origins preview, and we're already about 24 minutes into the show, Rhett. So let's do a really, really quick Origins preview as part of our news. And then, believe it or not, we have two more news items. All right, here's what I have for this is our Origins preview, having done a whole show dedicated to it last year. One, as the Purple Pawn states, it's, quote, not a shopping con. If you are going to one con this year to buy stuff, go to Gen Con, maybe even Dragon Con. But that said, Saturday admission is $5 for the show floor. So you can't play any games, but you can drive down and shop at the show that Purple Pawn says is not a shopping con.
Well, they're trying to fix that.
Yeah. And well, you know what's funny is I know guys who are driving down from Grand Rapids for the day to Columbus, Ohio for the $5 admission.
Well, you know, it certainly does one other thing, and that's if you're close enough to it, it does allow you to do a meet and greet with all the people who are in the industry. They're not as busy as they're going to be at Gen Con. So if you're a fan and you want to go and say hi to your, you know, favorite designer or your artists or whomever, you know, you possibly have a shot at it here where you wouldn't have a shot at it at Gen Con. Now, the downside to this is less personnel are brought to the show. So, you know, less opportunity to have the people you were looking for even be in attendance.
Mm-hmm. Now, that said, right, having both pros and cons on the shopping part of the game. On the game side, one, the boardroom is pretty awesome. Okay, you can get a ribbon, and it allows unlimited access, unlimited play to something like 1,000 board games. Including some of the obscure stuff, you know, the historicals and things like that. There'll be guys camped out there all weekend playing that kind of stuff. The boardroom is a really, really awesome thing. That said, the show is very strong in role playing, and it's got a decent miniatures component. I won't say it's amazing, but Rhett, you could probably comment on the miniatures at that show more than
no. I'm pretty much with you. It's a good show. My take always on Origins is, it's not the best consumer show from the point of view of retailing. It is a really good show for playing. Gamma's working hard to try to get their attendance back up. I mean, it's been in decline for a number of years, and you know they're moving back towards where they had been at their peak. But, you know, again, this is still probably the second best show that there is out there as far as the size of it is concerned. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you know, really still, which is still, I have to say, surprises me, nothing touches Gen Con as far as attendance. I mean, not even close. And that really surprises me that, you know, Origins, which finally stabilized, you know, it's not bouncing all over the United States.
Yeah, I want to say Origins is between 10 and 12,000. A decade ago, I think you were saying it was probably around 16,000.
Yeah, I think their peak was about 16.
Yeah, and Gen Con had a flat year last year at 29,000 in individual admissions or something like that.
Yeah, they're, you know, they've claimed for years over 40, depending on how you did the count. And, you know, there was those interesting accounting processes. So it gets challenged to, like, compare old accounting versus new accounting. But, yeah, it's been a growing show as well, and it's still, you know, twice as big.
Yeah. So, but anyways, Origins starts on Thursday. I think setup is Wednesday, right? There might be some business stuff going on Wednesday as well.
Actually, I thought the show opened Wednesday.
You know, it might.
I thought this was like Gen Con. It was going to be a Wednesday kind of opening to the retail end of it, and then the game end of it kicked off, you know, Thursday through Sunday.
I think you're right. I apologize. I'm not going to Origins this year that I know of, so it's I wasn't paying attention to the start date. But it ends on Sunday.
Yes, it does end on Sunday.
So, and $5 admission on Saturday, maybe even on Sunday as well. So if you're within a 7-hour drive, oh my God, like from Grand Rapids, it might only be 6, you can drive down for the day. I thought that was a long way to go. Anyways, moving on. That was our Origins preview. We should have some kind of big fanfare for that. And again, it's a good show. Again, we'll put a link to the show in the show notes. I don't want to dismiss Origins. Origins is a really, really strong show. Given its geographic proximity, apparently I have a call coming in. Hold on. Oh, geez. Telemarketer. It being in geographic proximity to Gen Con, like I said, a lot of times if you got to pick a show, you're going to pick Gen Con. But again, yeah. Origins, good show, especially if you're a historical gamer, because those games are simply not going to be at Gen Con. They will be in the boardroom at Origins.
Yeah, I mean they have a much stronger attendance for their historical board games. And to a moderate sense, their miniatures as well is a little bit more historical bent than Gen Con is, though that doesn't really compare to the big historical.
No, the HMGS cons. Shows, no.
Yeah.
So, all right, moving on. Just for fun, I actually have a product release in here. Monster Manual 3 was released this week with over 300 more monsters. The book includes such classics, blah, 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 generally tougher adversaries, end quote. And I'm laughing because, see, it's the third monster manual. You've pretty much used up kobolds.
Yeah. Your orcs and your kobolds and your skeletons, they're done.
Yeah. Now we're into the weird stuff. So it would be interesting to see, because I think you said that there was a Pezzo release coming out next at Origins.
Actually, you know, there was one thing I was going to link to Origins here is that while it's not as good a show as Gen Con, it still does constitute a target date for new releases. You know, AEG just released Legend of the Five Rings, mm-hmm. You know, so it's less than a week old by the time it actually gets to Origins. I know that Catalyst has a few releases. I know that Fantasy Flight has a few releases. Fantasy Flight just released their new Wings of War. I think that's the right title. It's WoW, but that always throws off people in the industry.
Right.
You know, it's another 12 aircraft that they release annually. And, you know, again, it's a more historical-oriented product line, so it's targeted against there.
Yeah.
Almost everybody I know, almost all the key manufacturers, you know, Target, I would say their second biggest releases for Origins, with the possible exception of the, you know, question comes down to is the big release, the Gen Con release or the Christmas release for the year, mm-hmm. With the majority of them being Gen Con releases. But they still target good products for Origins.
Yes, and especially in the historical market, the Charles S. Roberts Awards and the Origins Awards mean a lot more in the board game market, I think. So that's something that they time. I know GMT has a couple of titles coming out timing with Origins. I just got the GMT mailer, and I apologize, I didn't read through it. Yeah, well, I glanced through it. Point noted. Origins and Gen Con and Christmas would be your three release points for the industry.
Yeah, I left those out, but I don't for sure. Like Columbia Games has new product releases. Clash of Arms has new product releases. Avalanche has a new product release. I don't think Multiman does, but I think that was...
actually going to make a Multiman joke about them targeting Origins of next year.
They're probably actually that release that they're targeting for Origins 2010 will release at Origins 2012.
But yeah, well, they now in their defense, they've actually just come out, I think, with one or two ASL related products, like Out of the Attic, like a reissue of Scenarios and things like that. So they did actually release some product recently.
Yeah, I just did actually see the ASL Journal, which was a reprint of like the very beginning parts of the ASL.
So
they're covering some stuff, and you know what, target for Origins. Anyway.
Yep. Okay. All right. Finally, we're done with the news. It took us almost 30 minutes to get through the news. We should never, ever, ever combine commentary with news ever again.
Well, only if we want a normal size show.
I know. Well, thank God Randall's traveling today, because we are going to we keep promising we're going to have Randall on the show. If we'd had him on the show this week, we would have had to cut him. But anyways, not like, you know, shank him or shiv him or anything, but just, you know, put him into a, you know, bump him to the next week. He'd be sitting in the green room. And anyways, our sponsorship this week is the Purple Pawn. We like to, again, can't say enough good things about that Games Workshop article on the Purple Pawn, so take a look at that. We'll put that in the show notes. And again, thanks also to the Purple Pawn for hosting the podcast. And listener mail this week, Rhett, I want to just say we got an email from our wonderful friend Ivan, who points out, as has everyone else, that I'm wrong about the Dresden Files.
And what is it that Ivan has pointed out that you were wrong about the Dresden Files, along with the obvious?
That it's, well, we'll play the message here in a moment, but basically, why don't we just play the message?
Hello, Ben. Hello, Rhett. This is Ivan calling from the Chicago area. It's always nice to hear both of your voices again, even if it is coming through my radio instead of over the cube walls. I'm just now catching up on Paper Money Podcast number 26, having been caught by the iTunes bubble, and wanted to voice in with Rhett on the Dresden Files RPG. If you listen to any writing podcasts, which I listen to a lot of, such as I Should Be Writing, or Writing Excuses, or The Dragon Pages out of Arizona, the Dresden Files is a very hot property. As far as authors are concerned, as far as book publishing rights and deals and things like that are going, there seems to be an awful lot of energy behind him and what he does. So I just wanted to weigh in there and say that, Rhett, I agree with you 100%. I think that the Dresden Files RPG is going to be a very good property that should go very well. Gentlemen, good day.
All right, so that's what Ivan had to say about the Dresden Files. Rhett, again, as you've pointed out, and I think someone else has pointed out in an email, I'm just wrong about the Dresden
Files. You're just wrong. But, yes. You know, it is not going to be the first or the last time that will have occurred in your life. Ask your wife. She'll point that out to you.
Yes. And, Rhett, moving on, how can people tell me that I'm wrong?
Well, you can tell Ben you're wrong, that he's wrong. Or you can talk to us about something much more interesting. You can email us at papermoney@thepurplepawn.com. You can Skype us at papermoneypodcast. Or you can phone us at 773-634-9377. I'm going to write a jingle for that one day. You know, the Empire one always runs.
You threaten every week. Actually, I got a call from Dan, who... did our theme for the lawyers, guns, and money, and paper money. He's looking for a theme to write, so maybe we should give him the phone number.
There we go.
Yeah, and again, I still have not gotten back in touch with the Dice Like Thunder guy, so hopefully we're gonna talk to them on the next show. And then we don't have an interview this week, thank God, because we're already way over our time limit. Hoping to talk to Randall before Origins, just haven't had a chance. I'm sure hold on. Try and act surprised that someone got swamped with details before a big show outing.
What a shock.
Exactly. So Anyways, upcoming stuff, I think, well, we've got Origins this week, and then we have a brief pause, and then we've got Gen Con, right? That's the...
Yeah, this is a really, really short period for some reason, it seems to me. This is like 5 weeks only between the two shows.
Well, you know, they keep moving up. Like, Origins used to be late July, then it was mid-July, then it was around July 4th weekend. Now it's moved up even earlier, but it seems like they keep fiddling with the Gen Con dates to avoid landing on top of a NASCAR race.
Yeah, you know, the big thing that they have to worry about is the Brickyard 400 over there in Indy. But, you know, I don't think it's really that much difference. Origins has been about the 4th of July weekend for a long time. This one's a little earlier than normal. It's on, you know, starting here on the 23rd. But, you know, the crazy stuff about this is, had it been the following weekend, you know, was it. That's it. You know, Gen Con is so early this year. I mean, Gen Con is the... I think it starts the 3rd or something. Crazy.
Oh, it's not that early, but it's close. Here, let me look it up.
I know it's the very first weekend.
Yeah. It starts the 4th. It's that Wednesday. So yeah. 4th through the 8th.
Yeah. You know, I knew the 3rd was in there. It's my travel day. But, you know, like I say, this year it's so early, and these two shows right on top of each other.
Yeah,
so production levels will also be crazy on that, you know, trying to get products.
Well, it should be interesting. It should be interesting. So
it certainly will be.
So anyways, and then for those of you who keep tuning in, because we keep promising interviews with Randall Bills, I swear to God, honestly, someday we will. I'm not going to promise the next show. Someday we will have someone from Catalyst Game Labs on the show, if only to say hi. I should drive to Columbus just to get Randall on a mic.
There you have it.
Anyways, on that note, here, let's take us out of here, Rhett. Here, why don't you tell them what our next show is?
Our next show is June 18th. It'll be an Origins post review.
It's not going to be. It's already June 20th, man.
And you're right. It will be.
It's actually going to be about July 2nd, I think.
Oh my gosh. Shows you just how fast time's going. All right. Our next show will be July 20th. It will be an Origin post show. Nice thing there is we will certainly know who won what. You know, a lot of awards, Charles Robert Awards and the Gamma Awards up there for the Origins Awards. We'll have a list of all the really exciting stuff, the unique special stuff, let's say, that made news, mm-hmm. along with our regular news coverage.
Yeah, and maybe an interview or a commentary or...
Maybe an interview with some human being besides the two of us talking on and on
and
on.
Well, you know, I've said a couple times in the show, I got to put together my show Bible and schedule everything out for the rest of the year like I did last year. And I think every time I think, oh, well, you know what, I'll wait till after the interview with Randall.
Which we've only been promising, I believe, 2 months now.
Yes, I know. So people won't even know who Catalyst Game Labs is by the time we get him on the show. So poor guy. It's not like he's not doing anything. I don't not picking on Randall. But anyways, I think that's it for this show. So here, Rhett, you do the takeout, and then I'll sound like I hadn't brought it up first.
All right. Well, that's it for this show. I'm Rhett Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark.